be seated.
This is our 130 case of the Nevada panel.
This is case number 51243, State of Nevada versus Luis Gonzalez. Luis Gonzalez versus State of Nevada, excuse me. For the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justices Gibbons, Cherry, and Seda, may it please the court. My name is Melissa Kolevrat, and I'm a deputy public defender representing Luis Gonzalez. I request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. In September of 2006, my client Luis Gonzalez used deadly force to defend himself against Tide Trejo, a dangerous gun-wielding gang member who had threatened to put a bullet in Mr. Gonzalez's head.
Now, we're not a jury now.
Yes, Your Honor. After a fight between two men, Mr. Gonzalez, who was intoxicated, saw Trejo reach for what Gonzalez thought was a gun, and believing that Trejo intended to kill him, Gonzalez fired 3 rapid gunshots at Trejo, who died at the scene. My client was convicted of murder, but this was a close case. Had the jury heard all the evidence that the defense tried to present and not heard the inadmissible, improper evidence from the state, Luis Gonzalez would not be serving 2 consecutive life sentences. First, the state introduced evidence that Gonzalez was in a gang and bolstered this claim with several highly prejudicial allegations, all of which were completely inadmissible. These included the allegation that Loco was Gonzalez's gang moniker, that he sustained a misdemeanor graffiti arrest, and that Gonzalez had ingested methamphetamine following the shooting. The court allowed the testimony, claiming that the defense statement in opening, that Gonzalez was a lover, not a fighter, opened the door. Saying that Luis was a lover, not a fighter, in no way opens the door to general bad character evidence. It was a statement that defense counsel took directly from a witness who was going to testify in the case, and if anything, only opened the door to Gonzalez's character for violence. The defense position that Luis Gonzalez was not a violent person was never effectively rebutted by anything in the state's case. Rather, the state used this general bad character evidence to paint Luis as Loco from the BPL gang, which is how they referred to him in their closing argument, and emphasizing this inflammatory and prejudicial evidence with every witness who was called during its case in chief. Luis's only gang affiliation was in California, and as he testified, was several years prior to him living here in Las Vegas. The state never charged a gang enhancement in this case, nor did it claim any nexus between Gonzalez's alleged gang affiliation and the homicide. The state introduced evidence of Gonzalez's graffiti arrest to further bolster the claim that he was in a gang and to show general criminality. This was a misdemeanor arrest with no adjudication, and its introduction was wildly improper. The state then twisted Luis's childhood nickname, Loco, into being a gang moniker to, again, further bolster this claim that he was a gang member. The defense at this point had presented no evidence of Luis Gonzalez's good character. So what does all this gang evidence mean? It doesn't show Luis to be objectively violent. It doesn't mean that Tide Trejo didn't threaten Luis. It fails to meet even the most basic relevancy requirements because it does nothing to make any fact and controversy in this case more or less likely.
Was there any discussion between the state, the defense, or the court about the Taveras instruction at this point in time?
I don't believe there ever was. And if there was a failure, the Taveras instruction is the limiting instruction, the purpose for which it should be used. Right. And if there was a failure, I'm almost positive that there was no discussion. If there was a failure of that, first of all, it's incumbent upon the state, and I believe that's in Rhymes as well, but it's incumbent upon the state to ask for such a limiting instruction. And secondly, if the state fails to ask for the limiting instruction, it's then incumbent upon the district court to give the instruction sua sponte.
Assuming there's error, excuse me, just to say that, I just wanted to follow up on that. Tell me why it's not harmless in this case.
Well, it's extremely prejudicial because it's the kind of evidence, and again, this is it's directly in violation of Lay v. State. And this is the case where gang enhancement and gang connection to the crime was actually alleged, and the court was very clear in that case that it's proper to come in at the penalty phase of the trial or if it's used for other than general character evidence. The reason why, as the court recognized in Lay, is that gang association especially is incredibly prejudicial. It's something that is all over the news right now. The Palo Verde High School shooting, the North Las Vegas officer who was just shot in his garage, all these are gang-related cases. It's all over the news, and all it does is prey upon the fear in the minds of the jury, make Luis look more likely to be a violent guy, even though, again, the state could never show any actual violence on his part. They simply tried to connect him to having a gang past and that making him more likely to have murdered Teddy Trejo and not killed him in self-defense.
Go ahead.
Counsel, may I just back up in follow-up to Justice Gibbons' question regarding the instruction? You answered that you are, I think you said you're not sure. May I then assume that you were not trial counsel?
I was not trial counsel, no.
What I want to ask is, from my reading of this, it sounds like the defense actually brought up the nickname Loco. Was there information about gang affiliation prior to the defense bringing up the name Loco, and that opened the door to all the stuff about gang affiliation?
No, you know, Justice, the only thing that I recall from my perusal of the record on the issue of the nickname Loco was that I believe in his cross-examination of one of the state's witnesses that Mr. – and I think this is what the state refers to in their brief – is that Mr. O'Brien slipped and referred to – said Loco and then corrected himself immediately and said Luis. I don't think that that in any way would open the door, but I mean the real place where all of this – all of the Loco – stuff comes in is Detective Wallace's videotape interrogation of both Maria and Luis, which were both played wholesale.
But if you brought it up, you being collectively your office, since you weren't the trial attorney, if you all opened the door, can't they walk through it?
It's our position that the door was not opened.
And but you're not sure. You weren't trial counsel, so you're not sure. Or are you sure?
I mean, no, I am sure. I did a thorough review of the record prior to coming in to argue this today. And I can tell you that the way that it came about was during opening statement, trial counsel said that Luis was a lover, not a fighter. This was something that was taken directly from a witness's statement. It doesn't go to general character. It's not saying he's a nice guy or he's a good guy. It simply goes directly to the narrow issue of his character for violence, which in a self-defense case is always going to be in play. That was, and it was at that point, as soon as they were outside the presence of the jury after opening, that the state stood up and said, Judge, they said he's a lover, not a fighter. They've opened the door to character. And the trial court judge said, you know, you're right. The door was opened. How far it was open remains to be seen.
And then your counsel, your trial counsel, followed up with reference to what is purportedly either a gang nickname or a youthful nickname.
That's true. I mean, you're absolutely right. And Mr. Gonzalez testified about the origin of this nickname, which was he was a very hyperactive child. There was a character from a Hispanic cartoon called Pancho Pistolas who he'd run around pretending to be, and his family called him Loco. I mean, it's a very prejudicial nickname. It means crazy in Spanish. It's not gang related. It's just something that's followed him from childhood. Moving on, over defense objection, the jury saw a videotape of Detective Wallace, the main detective in this case, interrogating Maria Mojica, who had been a co-defendant up until the eve of trial. Now, the jury heard Detective Wallace grill Mojica for over an hour. Throughout the interview, the detective refers to Luis as Loco. Detective Wallace tells Maria, as though it were a fact, that he knows that Trejo was murdered and Luis did it. He tells Maria that he knows that her statements that Trejo was reaching for a gun are false. He tells Maria that Gonzalez confessed to killing Trejo and that Loco's story matches everyone else's story. And that was a wholesale fabrication. At that point, he had not even interviewed Luis. Now, keep in mind, this video was not played until after Detective Wallace had testified. And Detective Wallace testified before the defense knew that the videotape was coming in. Thus, there was no opportunity to cross-examine Detective Wallace on interview techniques and the way that the read technique, the way that detectives used ruses and used tricks to try and get a person that they're interrogating to say what they're trying to elicit from them. So the tape is clearly rife with hearsay. It's full of cobbled-together innuendos and outright lies that Wallace told as part of this interview technique. It was as though Wallace was allowed to get up a second time and testify again to refute Maria Mojica's testimony, making him effectively the state's third chair in this case. In addition to all of Detective Wallace's hearsay statements, the state was allowed through this video to elicit the detective's opinion on the ultimate issue and controversy in this case, whether this homicide was in fact a murder or self-defense. And there's frankly no way in the world that the state could put a live witness on to do the same thing, repeat their theory of the case over and over and over as Detective Wallace does in this video. Wallace summarizes what he believes happened in the case, and he characterizes his version of events as the truth. In so doing, he vouches for essentially all the state's witnesses, saying he's comfortable with the version that they've given, that everyone has told him the same thing, and that he finds no reason not to believe the people who have told him that she had a gun and she handed it to Loco. And he does all this while openly expressing disbelief in Maria's version of the events. He has no legal basis to opine on the ultimate issue. He's not an expert. He's never been qualified as an expert. And this is simply a backdoor used by the state to introduce otherwise inadmissible testimony. Next, the state calls, in its case in chief, the first responding police officer followed by the medical examiner. Now, despite the fact that the medical examiner only referred to 8 autopsy photos during his testimony in this case, the state was allowed to admit and publish to the jury 66 gruesome photos detailing the injuries to Mr. Trejo. And following this gruesome display, the state completely ambushed the defense with a surprise witness, Lydia Trejo, Tyde Trejo's mother. The defense immediately objected and approached the bench. And it's clear from the record that the state's alleged purpose in calling Lydia was to identify her son's body. It's also clear from the record that the defense offered to stipulate to identity to obviate the need for her testimony. Nonetheless, the court allowed her, an unnoticed witness, to testify. So the first impression that the jury gets of this violent, gun-toting Tyde Trejo is through his grieving mother.
I'm going to save the rest of time?
Yes.
A little. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Stanton, on behalf of the District Attorney's Office in Clark County?
Yes, for the record, David Stanton, on behalf of Clark County District Attorney's Office. Thank you, Your Honor. I just heard counsel in her argument say that in the relationship to the gang evidence that was admitted that, quote, that the defense did not admit, prior to the gang references first occurring, did not admit any evidence of the defendant's good character in this case. And simply, that is belied by the record. Your Honors, in this case, the first warning bell that something was going to happen regarding gangs took place in the opening argument. Counsel's already referred to it. It's undisputed on the record. And that was the lover, not the fighter comment by counsel in opening statement. The state objected and offered to the trial court that indeed the door had been opened. And the court, being, I believe, very cautious, said, well, indeed, that would be my ruling, but argument is not evidence. Let's see what happens during the trial. So everybody is on pins and needles now, knowing that gang evidence, if it comes in, the judge knows that the door is going to be open. And so in the cross-examination of Caroline Enriquez, this is the minor girl who's in the apartment, whose mother is the one that shouts to the defendant when he has the shotgun 3 times, don't shoot him, don't shoot the victim, 3 times. She's on the stand. And this is the examination on 586 of the record. Questions by Mr. O'Brien to this young girl about the defendant when he lived with the witness and her mother. And the question is, did he help clean? Yes. Did he help take care of the children? Yes. In your opinion, Luis is a pretty nice guy. Is that true? Yes. In your opinion, Luis is a calm person. Is that true? Yes. All predating the admission of the gang reference. But now directly inserting the victim's or the defendant's good character in this case in a very direct and much more powerful way than what even was done at the in the opening statement. And if that were enough, the record is replete with evidence during the examination, cross-examination, once again, of Caroline Enriquez, of references to gangs, and in this context. There are a number of other individuals at this party, and the question posed by defendant's counsel, Monster, Bones, and Snoopy, once again, all referring to nicknames and allegedly monikers, brought out by the defendant, belong to a gang. Is that right? Yes. And what was kind of party was it? A gang kickback party. Yes. Further question, and there's probably 8 examples of the things that I'm just reading to you. And then referencing once again to Monster, Snoopy, and Bones that they were drinking and practicing their gang symbols at 592. We have further references, and Cleaver, one of the monikers, is kind of an upper level of the same gang that they all belong to, right? That's at 595. All this in preparation for the testimony that the victim has a physical altercation with one of these opposing members of gangs, all elicited by defense counsel before the state even introduces any gang evidence. And in fact, at 597, we go even further with a question once again by Mr. Gonzalez's counsel. Now we've got Monster, we get Snoopy, we get Bones, and we get the other Blythe Street gang guy on the patio where the murder takes place. So, Your Honors, the introduction of gang evidence was done. Not only did they open the door, they kicked it open repeatedly, and they were the one that first introduced it in the evidentiary portion of this trial.
Now, when this defense attorney testifies in the ineffective assistance of counsel, are you going to remind him that he opened the door to this?
Well, absolutely, Judge, but here's what I think occurred, and you were a trial judge for an awful long time. The defense had a tough time in this case because they had an overwhelming set of facts against them. The most compelling was the forensic evidence itself. You're talking about a pump shotgun that was shot and fired 3 times into the victim, twice in the front part of his body and the other when he went to his knees and his head is on the ground. The one, as it was uncontrovertedly testified in a forensic examination, enters the back of his head and literally blows off the top of the victim's head. So from that factual basis, before you interject any of the personalities of is the victim a bad, violent guy, or is the defendant a great guy, you got a problem. In addition, you have uncontroverted testimony that just prior to the shots being fired, the owner of the apartment, the woman who testified, is yelling at the defendant 3 times not to shoot the victim. And so I think what the defense had was a pretrial ruling to exclude gang evidence. They pushed it up to the line that I think they could, but ultimately I think they made the assessment, look, we have to introduce some assessment of our guy as being a good character. That's the only way we can have a shot at winning this case, because this was a strong factual case. Coupled with what happened in the trial, and that is 2 critical things happened in the trial. One was the girl who brings the shotgun to the party, who both the defendant and her gave various different versions. And obviously a jury is going to be very suspicious of that. But her name, Maria Mojica, took the stand and testified that she had been intimidated by police, that she there were 2 detectives, it was cold, she doesn't remember what she told the detectives. And this goes with the argument that counsel makes about playing both her tape statement as well as the defendant's. And the impeachment that videotape showed as to rebutting everything that she had taken to trial, understanding she had pled the morning of calendar call to 2 counts involving conspiracy, and then as the primary witness, along with the defendant himself, who testified in this case. And respectfully, the examination, the cross-examination of both the defendant and her just annihilated any case that they had at that point. She comes in and says that she doesn't remember, and yet it's in direct and opposite of what the defendant then soon thereafter comes in and testifies to the same jury. So that was devastating on behalf of the defense, that the defendant himself and what they were hoping was their crucial witness was going to kind of save the day. And it kind of imploded on them based upon the impeachment of the videotape. And obviously, I understand counsel's argument that indeed some of those references by the detectives in the videotape testimony might be of some damage to their case, but understanding that it was not offered for the truth of the matter asserted, and that's why it's not, as the defense claims, evidence for the jury to consider. And most importantly for this court to consider, it was never argued by the state as evidence. And thus, the rule that it is hearsay doesn't apply because by legal definition, the statements that Detective Wallace made in the videotape is not hearsay. Anything that he said or what he brought into the interview through the various interview techniques are indeed not hearsay because they're not offered nor argued for the truth of the matter. And indeed, Your Honors, the statement by the defendant when he takes the stand, he directly states on numerous occasions that he told the truth, that he is telling the truth, and then he had a very difficult time explaining under cross-examination, and I think it was basically his credibility was just simply destroyed by the prosecutor in his cross-examination because he couldn't keep his facts and the versions of his story correctly, and indeed he says to the or testifies to the jury that most of what was, he lied for the first 38 minutes in the interview and then turns around and says, no, I'm being truthful. The testimony both of her and Ms. Mallorca were used to directly impeach the contents of the interview and the accusations that they were claiming that they were, at least in Ms. Mallorca's case, intimidated by the detective, that there were two. In fact, there was only one detective, Detective Wallace, in the videotaped interview. She said she couldn't remember what she told the police, and indeed their versions changed. As you remember, I'm sure, from the record, the defendant had stated to Detective Wallace that he brought the shotgun to the apartment. In fact, Ms. Mallorca testified and told the police that she was the one that went and got the shotgun. So the necessity and the strategic importance of the content, not just the question and answers, but the actual demeanor and affect in the tenor, if you will, the temperature inside those interview rooms was very important based upon what Ms. Mallorca said and what the defendant testified to. The fact that that was admitted after doesn't prohibit the defense from then calling Detective Wallace and asking and getting into exactly what counsel just argued to you, that they could have, if they felt and deemed important enough, recalled Detective Wallace and got into that portion of it. I want to just briefly talk about the testimony and the exclusion of Brandon Contreras, and as counsel just argued to you, that they were quote-unquote ambushed by the unnoticed witness, that is, the victim's mother. The only thing that they testified to was the identity of the victim. And thus, I would be hard-pressed to see how that's a trial ambush of someone who they had no questions on cross-examination. It was an uncontested issue. Yet
how about the use of the autopsy photos?
Judge, that's a great question. There's 66, but the purpose for the number of 66 were beyond just what the doctor needed to determine cause and manner, but also to show the confines of where this dispute took place. And it was a small patio outside an apartment. And to show the various different views, the body was still in it when they took those photographs that outline the patio itself. Also, forensically, where the blood spatter was, especially to show the later shots where the victim had been proned out, once again directly rebutting a self-defense claim, becomes critical in this case that indeed the second shot was only not only back to front, but as the defendant was proned out. And in order to obviously visually depict that, photographs of the blood spatter around that gunshot wound were critical. That doesn't go to cause and manner from a pathologist's perspective, but it goes to self-defense, because obviously, as you are well aware, the doctor's testimony would not deal with self-defense, just merely cause and manner. But obviously, self-defense was the theme of this case, and thus the necessity for the large amount of photographs of this rather small confined area. And unless the
what about the instruction, the Tavares bad acts, prior bad acts instruction?
Judge, and number one, it was never requested, never asked for. And in this particular case, I would submit that based upon how the evidence came out, once again, they explained and the defendant took the stand kind of what I would say relieving the pressure of any negative inference of the name Loco, number one, because they argued at trial and just now before this court that the name Loco was not anything dealing with he was crazy and that it was not necessarily involved with a gang, but indeed that there was a neutral, benign meaning attached to Loco. And indeed, as far as the other references to gangs, they were relatively minimal. And the only examination that took place was by the state of the defendant on cross-examination after he had denied any further gang affiliation after he left Los Angeles and came to Las Vegas. And he was impeached with the cross-examination that indeed he had, and this is, I thought, a very conservative approach by the prosecutor, an interaction with law enforcement where he was tagging a gang name and moniker on a wall. Now, the defendant explained that it was not a gang per se, but a group that had spray-painted graffiti in various areas of the town, but that it wasn't a criminal gang. And that was the extent of it. There was no further additional inquiry into that area. And thus, Judge, I would say Tavares would not have been required, and it was that in the totality of the nature of the interjection of the gang that was done not only by defense counsel, but designed to kind of paint the picture. If you look at this record, 99% of the reference to the violent gang activity was directed towards and uncontroverted towards the victim and not towards the defendant. And thus, I think Tavares wasn't required, and if it was, then it was harmless error.
Mr. Stanton, is it your reading of Tavares and the subsequent cases of Rimes and McClellan that if defense is the one to initiate this gang affiliation evidence, first with the opening statement saying they're going to, and then they subsequently do, that it takes it out of Tavares where the prosecution no longer has the duty to propose the limiting instruction?
You know, Judge, I think it's a tough call. I think it's, I hate to say it.
I mean, it's a legal issue we're concerned about because
sure.
This is kind of a different twist on these cases here. And I just want
I literally think it's, to fall back on a what some may say is a safety valve answer, that it's a case-by-case basis, but I really think it is based upon how much of an impact to the people that are in the trenches that are reading the vibe of the trial and the jury and how that evidence comes in through what witnesses, to how salacious that information comes in. Here, I think it's relatively benign as it was presented to the jury, as opposed to argued by counsel outside their presence. In those cases, I think that it's not as compelling of a need to give that instruction.
What exception does it come in under 48045, if it would? Saying that Justice Gibbons' analysis is not the correct one, but rather that it is prior bad acts. How would you justify it under 48045?
You mean in the interjection of a gang in this particular case?
Yeah, as to why it's not showing that he would do something that shows his character as bad.
Well, I don't think it was here showing his character. It was directly to rebut what was directly elicited by the witness of Enrique Contreras that lived with the defendant. So it wasn't an admission under 48045 to show a particular character trait. It was to rebut the character trait that the defense had proffered in their examination.
Well, then what Justice Gibbons comes into play, as far as you're concerned, that this is not a typical 48045 exception.
Yes, Judge.
Okay. By the way, I'm not advocating that position. I'm just asking.
I understand. I understand.
I understand that the appellant's argument as well. I'm just we pose questions each side to test the theory.
But it's a good argument.
It is.
For both sides. For both sides, that you don't have to worry about prior bad act analytics on these particular cases when you're talking about characters. It's a completely different animal. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Justice. And if I may begin right there. The language of Rimes is unequivocal. The state must request a limiting instruction. Must. There is no sliding scale. They must request it. And it's not just the bad character evidence of the gang. It's the supporting evidence of the actual prior bad acts. The misdemeanor tagging arrest. The involvement with MSK, which, as he explained, is a tagging crew. And you can ask anyone on the Metro gang unit. It's not a recognized gang. It's a tagging crew. They consider themselves artists, whether or not that flies with anyone else. That's how they consider themselves, and that's what it is. And then also, I'm sorry, if I can just refer to my notes.
Well, my question, of course, is going to be, let's say we agree with you 100%. There should have been an instruction. Why is it not harmless in this particular case after what Mr. Stanton just presented to us about the evidence?
Well, with all due respect, Justices, I think if this appears as cut and dried as Mr. Stanton has purported that it is today, it's only because all of these bad things are in the record. And as Mr. Stanton alluded to in his argument, we were precluded from bringing out the testimony of Brandon Contreras. He was a witness who admittedly was noticed late. This was a situation where Maria Mojica had taken a plea on the eve of trial. Her attorney, literally the Friday before Monday start, handed a bunch of materials to Mr. O'Brien and said, have at it. If there's anything in there you can use. Mr. O'Brien, over the weekend, finds the statement of Brandon Contreras on Monday before a single juror is impaneled, before a single witness is called. Mr. O'Brien says that he'd like to call Mr. Contreras to testify to the specific instance of Tyde Trejo's violent character, Brandon Contreras being someone without a dog in the fight, who's completely neutral witness, not related to anyone in the case. He hands over a sworn statement from Brandon Contreras explaining exactly what he's going to testify to, and any intermediate remedy could have been fashioned in this case to do something less extreme than completely precluding the testimony. They could have granted a small continuance. They could have made a proffer outside the presence of the jury. There's any number of things that could have been done that would have gotten this testimony in. The exclusion of this testimony combined with the inclusion of all of the prejudicial things in this case are the only thing that makes it appear to be a completely not close case, as Mr. Stanton has tried
and,
to
And state for the record exactly what Contreras would have testified to.
Contreras would have testified to a specific incident that took place where he was a 7-Eleven clerk. Tyde Trejo came into the 7-Eleven to, I think his words were, to jack some beer. This is specifically important because Mr. Gonzalez knew of this instance, knew that, you know, they were outside the store waiting for Trejo to come out. They left because they didn't want to be involved in Trejo stealing this beer, and Trejo gets all crazy and violent, screaming at the clerk and generally being, you know, a crazy, violent guy, and it would have shown very specifically his character for violence, his short fuse, his fighting when, you know, his going to fight instead of, okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a lot that I wanted to respond to in this.
Well, you're out of time, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, if I could just wrap up quickly then.
I'll give you 30 seconds.
Okay. The cumulative effect of all these individual errors, you know, the door was not opened. The door was not opened by Mr. O'Brien's slip of the tongue. This was simply a situation where the state, you know, went through the door without any opening of it on our part. The questions to Carolyn Enriquez, the questions about Tyde Trejo's gang membership and all the gang membership of everyone else who was there, all of this was simply for the purpose of showing what happened that night in the full story. There was never any allegation that Mr. Gonzalez's former gang membership had anything to do with this case. He was not at that party. He was not tagging in the notebook. This all happened after all of this took place. Those questions to Carolyn Enriquez were for the specific purpose of laying the foundation for her to give her opinion of his character for violence. And with that, I'll...
Well, thank you to both counsel on this matter. We both did a very good job on this. Briefs are very good in this matter. And we thank you. And this case will stand submitted.